I thought your talk was excellent, and I thought the work that you presented was very exciting because it's got lots of applications in the future. Right. Perhaps we can start by, if you tell us a little bit about yourself and where you work.
Sure. I am a senior research scientist at Memorial Sloan Kettering Cancer Center. I did my PhD dissertation research with Claude Mears at UC Davis and went on to do two postdocs, the first at NIH with Gary Griffiths in the Imaging Probe Development Center, and the second with Dr. Reese Saxon Larson at Memorial Sloan Kettering Cancer Center in the Molecular Imaging and Training for Oncology R25T program.
Right. Okay, so you talked about, you gave a presentation on a novel way of doing therapy using radioisotopes, and we talked about that a lot in the podcast before, but there were some interesting aspects to what you did. What you did was in a mouse model, right?
Yes.
So, but you actually had a special kind of antibody that targeted colon cancer. What was special about it?
So it's a bispecific antibody that has the IgG framework, but then coming off of the C-terminus light chain, there are single chain domains that consist of a sequence for a anti-DOTA haptin antibody. So you're able to first administer the bispecific antibody in a non-radioactive form and wait sufficient time for the antibody to accrue at the tumor, as well as administer a clearing agent to reduce binding at off-target sites. And then we subsequently administer a low molecular weight radioactive DOTA haptin that has extremely rapid renal clearance. And when you combine the radioimmunotherapy with that bispecific antibody, you achieve extremely high therapeutic index because the residence of the radioactivity is diminished by the pharmacokinetics of the small molecule.
Right. So basically, you've got a very high target to background ratio.
That's right.
And that's important because a lot of the therapies that we've looked at with radioisotopes in the past, some have been good, some have been okay, but very few actually have enough target to background ratio to produce a cure. I mean, they basically suppress it for a while, maybe do a number of cycles. That's what we've seen with, for example, the neuroendocrine therapies. But it's only with things that have a very high target to background, like old-fashioned radioiodine therapy for thyroid cancer, that we've been able to get a cure. So the potential is that by increasing that target to background, by doing that sort of targeting, then clearance so that you get rid of the background, and then giving a tracer that gets cleared very rapidly from the body apart from the tumor, so you can really go and give a very high dose of radiation that you might actually result in a clearance of the tumor by having a high target to background. What was the target to backgrounds for the different tissue types?
Well, I've actually developed a system in three different models, and in the GD2 system, it was superior to the GPA33 system, which I just described in my presentation for targeting colorectal cancer. And in the GD2 system, which is for neuroblastoma, sarcoma, other tumors, it was approximately 140-1 for the blood.
Wow.
And 20-1 for the kidney. And we also developed a curative regimen in a IMR32 xenograft model in nude mice and showed complete responses, including cures. So we've applied this to other targets. In the HER2 system,
right, for breast cancer,
we actually have the lowest therapeutic index, and that is because the therapeutic index for that system is approximately 20-30-1 for the blood, but
right.
We still have 10-1 for the kidney, which we're happy about. But the reason why is because in a pre-targeting system, you ideally want an antigen-antibody complex that does not internalize. And with HER2 targeting with Herceptin, with trastuzumab, you actually get internalization as part of the pharmacodynamic modulation. And that complex internalizes, and that serves as an artificial receptor for a subsequently administered radionuclide haptin. So our therapeutic index is diminished by with diminishing tumor uptake in that system.
Right.
So we still have exciting blood levels that are very low. We have kidney levels that are very low, but the therapeutic index in that case is attenuated because the tumor uptake is not as substantial.
Right, but in that case, of course, you're dealing with a type of cancer that's very difficult to treat.
Definitely, right. Yeah. And we want to apply it to ovarian, pancreatic. The targets.
Wonderful pancreatic cancer. I mean, that's a really tough one.
The targets were specifically chosen to encompass a wide variety of human solid tumors, and our proof of concept studies, we've only been able to comprehensively evaluate three different targets, but we have more antibodies in the pipeline against other targets, and we also want to look at HER2 targeting in other models as well besides just breast cancer. So the most of my work in that study has been with the BT474 breast cancer xenograft model, but we've started to extend it to SCOV3, which is ovarian cancer line, and there's actually another talk at this meeting that describes kinetic modeling and dosimetry of that pre-targeting strategy.
Right. So you gave, in the example you gave three cycles of treatment,
yes.
Right?
Yes.
Now, that's not many considering, but what you really want to do is give enough therapy so that you don't develop resistance, right?
That's right. We've administered as much as five cycles so far and still haven't seen toxicity. And what we're really interested in is the radiobiologic factors that determine response, whether they be intrinsic or extrinsic. And also, how do we account for low antigen density? How do we modify our pre-targeting strategy in order to obtain the highest therapeutic index with the least trial and error? You know, how can we make it patient-specific? And that's really why we wanted a theranostic component,
right,
where we could have a non-invasive quantitative approach to dosimetry that we can adjust accordingly with kinetic modeling potentially in order to devise a patient-specific treatment plan.
Right. And of course, you're dealing with the most difficult concepts we've had with dealing with cancer, and a lot of the cancer treatments involve surgery or radiotherapy where you've got large tumors that you can actually see. But a lot of the cancers that we really have problems with are the small tumors. This is not going to have a problem with a small tumor, right?
Right. And also because it's systemic, which the radioimmunotherapy that we see having the highest therapeutic index is compartmental, where it's intrathecal administration for treatment of pediatric neuroblastoma cancers.
Yes.
And we want to develop a systemic therapy in order to address residual micrometastatic disease,
right,
and similar to what peptide-targeted therapies are designed for. So we want to develop our model with solid tumors because we acknowledge that solid tumor radioimmunotherapy is very inefficient and largely limited by the myelotoxicity, as one of the gentlemen spoke about during the session. But so we want to overcome that. We want to establish dose-response relationships during our pilot preclinical development, but we are looking to address small metastatic tumors or a disseminated model in order to verify that we can apply it in that context. But we're confident that if we can apply it in a solid tumor complex, especially one that is rapidly growing, that we can address small volume disease because the antibody uptake we expect is to be greater because you don't have the same tumor microenvironment complications such as stroma, diffusion limitations, etc. So typically the antibody uptake is higher in the small volume disease.
Right.
And so we really consider the solid tumor case to be a nice model for development.
Right. And of course the trick to this is developing the antibody, really?
Yes.
And you're genetically engineering the antibody?
Yes, we are. So it's a platform approach in that the clearing agent and the radiolabeled dotahaptin are the same, and you just interchange the antibody. And what I feel is a major advancement in this space is that the IgG single chain format that we use, we have proven that you can genetically engineer antibodies against multiple targets reproducibly without substantial issues with expression yields and aggregation. So that, I from what I've seen with the bispecific antibody production previously, that you have to have the proper structure in order to get high yields and in order to enable these preliminary studies in vivo. Because with the pre-targeting technique, by design, you want to saturate the tumor. So you have to do extensive dose escalation, and that requires substantial amounts of antibody.
Right, right. And the Haptin that you talked about, what Haptin did you use?
It's benzyl DOTA. So it's benzyl DOTA that we radiolabel. We obtain it. It's from a commercial source, and then we radiolabel with either lutetium or yttrium isotopes.
Right.
Right.
Okay. So so there's enough path length in those to actually kill the tumor in terms of that?
Yes. We anticipate that for larger disease that you would want a beta emitter with the longer half length, but we are also working to adapt the system for alpha emitters for the residual disease and hopefully combine the two together because of the versatility of the technique. And we're looking at multiple dosing strategies where maybe we can give the antibody and the clearing agent once and then follow it with multiple radioactive injections where we alternate, let's say, between a beta and alpha.
Ah, okay.
We're really, that's going to be governed by microdosimetry and the initial targeting that we see with the system.
This is really exciting. I mean, this is amazing. I mean, this is really going to deal with a lot of the cancers that we have been so resistant to therapy for such a long time.
I think what's really inspiring is the initial work that has been done by all the pioneers of pre-targeting, especially with the streptavidin constructs, as well as the anti-Haptin antibodies, specifically the Sharkey-Goldenberg constructs, and those have achieved exploration in clinical trials, and I think it's really impressive, their data. But for example, with the streptavidin construct, you can only give it once.
Right.
So we are really driven by the milestones that have already been achieved, and that's why we have such an emphasis on therapeutic index. We acknowledge that really the only way that we're going to be able to achieve substantial responses in these tumors is to be able to administer very high amounts of radioactivity, and so we're specifically designing that to enable translation of the approach with the high therapeutic index.
So when are we going to see this in humans?
We hope within 3 to 5 years. We're attempting to attain funding for the GMP production of the anti-GPA33 antibody, and then we're also looking at other targets, but that's going to be the biggest milestone is producing that at GMP quality and going through everything that's required by the FDA, and then as well as deciding whether we need to manufacture the clearing agent or if we're going to attempt the radioimmunotherapy without, and then the GMP manufacture of the Haptin will be a concern as well as the safety, toxicity, etc. So we have some previous pre-targeting construct that we can build from but the biggest limitation that we see is the production of the bispecific antibody.
Right, enough volume. So it's a bit, you need a very different volume for a mouse than a human, obviously.
Definitely, yes. We anticipate that we'll have to inject hundreds of milligrams.
Right. Well, very exciting stuff.
Oh, thank you.
Really exciting stuff.
Oh, thank you so much.
And thank you so much for giving up your time for the podcast.
Oh, yeah. Oh, of course.
And where can people find out more about this?
So we are on the Sloan Kettering website. You can look at my name or you can look up my research director's name, Dr. Stephen Larson, and find out more and obtain our contact information.
Excellent. Okay. Thank you very much.
Oh, thank you.
Thanks.
Okay.